Hello, this is Steve Burei, president of Discovery Institute. I want to take a moment to thank all of the listeners of the ID the Future podcast and all of our faithful supporters. Each year, the Center for Science and Culture produces over 100 original ID the Future broadcasts covering a wide range of subjects, including interviews with scientists and scholars like Michael Behe, author of Darwin's Black Box, David Berlinski, author of The Devil's Delusion, science historian Michael Flannery, molecular biologist Doug Axe, and many more. If you enjoy the news and information you get regularly on the ID the Future podcast, I would encourage you to take just a few moments and go to www.idthefuture.com and click on the yellow donate button at the top of the page. Your tax-deductible donation will allow us to keep producing this podcast. Again, please go to www.idthefuture.com and click on the yellow donate button. Thank you for your support, and now on with the show.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. In this episode, we'll continue our conversation with the editor of The Magician's Twin, C.S. Lewis on Science, Scientism, and Society, the associate director of the Center for Science and Culture, Dr. John G. West. In this podcast, we'll talk about Lewis's view of materialist evolution, the modern argument that human beings are just big bags of chemicals, and assertions that Lewis would embrace cosmic and biological evolution and reject intelligent design arguments. Why would Lewis object to the insistence that humankind arose from a purely natural process?
This is an interesting story because it starts before Lewis was a Christian. And anyone who knows a little bit of Lewis's history will probably recognize that he started out being a little kid after when his mom died and some other things happened. He basically became an atheist agnostic and was actually smitten by the scientific popularizers of his time, like H.G. Wells in particular, and their story of this blind evolving universe. But then while he was on the front lines of World War I, he was wounded and he ended up in the hospital and had to spend a lot of time recuperating. And he read this book called Creative Evolution by a French Nobel laureate, Henri Bergson. And Bergson wasn't against evolution as a form of common ancestry. He thought that things did evolve from lower animals, but he was very critical of the idea that Darwin's process of natural selection or survival of the fittest, acting on these random errors and random variations in nature, could actually produce what Darwin claimed. And that really struck Lewis. And we know of that because of some correspondence he had at the time. He wrote a letter to his dad a couple of years later where he basically said that Darwin and Spencer, he was now convinced, had built basically their theory of evolution on sand, on these gigantic assumptions and irreconcilable contradictions. And so even before he was a Christian, this was while Lewis was still an atheist, he began to see some of the problems with this. And I think the bottom line for him was something that he eventually got out of medieval philosophy, which is an effect cannot be greater than its initial cause. And so if you're trying to explain things like human reason or morality or other things, and you're positing that, well, it came from an unreasoning, impersonal process, you're actually arguing that a lesser cause is creating a greater effect. Well, where does that come from? And just the logic of it didn't make sense. That if you're going to explain something like human reason, you have to posit a cause that's capable of producing reason, not just an impersonal, non-reasonable cause. And Lewis applied that insight across the board. And so by the end of his life, he was pointing out, when you see the appearance of design and complexity in nature, you know, rocks don't just magically self-assemble into a house. And he was more than willing to admit that natural selection could knock out things. He gave the example, you know, it could knock out a wing or something and make something less complicated. But this idea of building these structures that look purposive and building things like human reason from this non-reasoning process, Lewis just thought the evidence didn't show that. And if anything, it went against some of the basic rules of reasoning on which science itself depends.
There may be some irony in asking this next question because Lewis is so famous for his children's novels featuring talking animals. But what would Lewis say separates men from animals?
Well, actually, I think, you know, he would have a pretty traditional Judeo-Christian answer of our reason is the key thing for him. Reason and imagination, and those are probably the key things.
Why might Lewis object to a modern argument that human beings are just big bags of chemicals and that free will is an illusion?
Well, part of it goes back to the basic rules of logic. If you really believe that, on what basis are you making the argument? Because how do we know that we're just collections of chemicals and that everything is dictated by that. That very claim is a truth claim about reality, that you're actually, by making it or arguing that that claim isn't just dictated by your blind chemicals, it's actually true. That's self-contradictory. And if you're going to try to use reason to make an argument that actually says that reason doesn't get you to the truth and is incomprehensible and doesn't make sense, you've really cut out the legs from under you. And that was actually one of Lewis's favorite big arguments. Materialists that given a materialist account of mind are contradicting themselves. And it's interesting. This was an area where Lewis also, many modern, say, philosophers, like one of the most leading philosophers today, Alvin Plantinga, later adapted and further refined Lewis's basic argument in this area, the argument from reason, and made it even more rigorous. Lewis was intrigued, though, because even someone as of a materialist as Charles Darwin, in his own private writings, this idea troubled him. And Lewis read Darwin's autobiography. And one of the things we do in this book is actually go through, no one has done this before, the annotations that Lewis wrote in these books on science, and especially evolution, and underlining and other things. In Darwin's autobiography, Lewis underlined two passages, underline some others, but two particular passages of note that Darwin wrote, where Darwin was asking the question, well, you know, if I really think that my mind is just the development from these lower animals to this impersonal process, what reason do I have to believe that these conclusions I'm making, my theory about this, is correct? And so Darwin himself recognized that, and Lewis found that interesting because Lewis did think that that was a very powerful argument. Now, Darwin didn't really follow it to its logical conclusion, but Darwin himself was troubled by this. How do you actually account for mind in a blind Darwinian process?
In Chapter 6, Darwin and the Dock, which is a chapter you wrote in your book here, you point out that Francis Collins, in his bestseller, The Language of God, asserted that Lewis would urge Christians to accept the animal ancestry of humans, and that philosopher Michael Peterson argues that Lewis would embrace cosmic and biological evolution and reject intelligent design arguments. Now, obviously, Discovery Institute, very prominent in the intelligent design movement. Where do they go wrong?
It's really great that you should raise this, and people who have listened to me before or other people from Discovery know that we're big on defining your terms. And so I think one of the real issues when people say, well, Lewis supported this or that, they don't define their terms. So what type of evolution do you mean? Really, modern evolutionary theory makes two big claims. One, we came from one universal common ancestor. So basically, humans, chimps and fungi share ultimately, you know, the same ancestor. And then the second one is that the mechanism for that was really this blind, purposeless process of natural selection acting on these random genetic mistakes, and that isn't goal-directed and is not guided. It's an undirected process. Lewis, as a Christian, believed, and actually I do too, I happen to be a Christian, that you could be a real Christian and actually accept the idea that there were animal precursors to human beings. So he accepted that in theory. Now, that doesn't mean he necessarily believed it. In fact, the evidence suggests as he went along in his life, he thought that the claims made, particularly for human evolution in certain areas, were overblown. People may remember the famous or infamous Piltdown Man hoax, which was this composite character of an orangutan and human fossils that was supposed to be this amazing missing link for years and years. Lewis actually wrote a poem poking fun at this as a hoax a couple years before it was finally definitively shown to be a hoax. And Lewis also really believed, as a serious Christian, that the first human beings were morally innocent and they willfully then rejected God. And that's something that most modern theistic evolutionists have a hard time with because, of course, evolution is driven, as Carl Giberson says, who is a theistic evolutionist, driven by selfishness. And so they really think that human beings were evil to begin with. And so even on common ancestry, it's quite right, and we point out in the book, that Lewis didn't have a problem in theory with that theologically. If you narrowly understood it, and if you still believed in a historical fall for human beings, and if you limited how you read that, and also pointed out that animal ancestry couldn't account for certain things like human morality and the mind. But now when you go over to the second big claim, really I'd say the most important claim of modern evolutionary theory, which is that it's an unguided, undirected process. There to claim that Lewis was somehow a supporter of evolutionary theory is just beyond the pale. Lewis was very clear that you cannot get what you see in nature, in human beings with reason and morality through a blind, unguided process. And he was very skeptical of some of his fellow theists who tried to fuse those two. One of the most famous sort of theistic evolutionists of his time was Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who wrote a book called The Phenomenon of Man. Lewis read the book and is just scrawled all sorts of almost snarky comments all along the way and wrote to a lot of correspondents about how he just thought, you know, this idea that you could square an undirected process and God is like having a square circle. You can't do it. It doesn't logically cohere. So he certainly was very down on evolution as an unguided, undirected process.
That concludes this episode of ID the Future. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast featuring the Associate Director of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, Dr. John G. West, and his new book, The Magician's Twin, C.S. Lewis on Science, Scientism, and Society. If you'd like more information on The Magician's Twin and about C.S. Lewis, please visit cslewisweb.com. Also, if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting the Center for Science and Culture. Go to discovery.org. Click the Science and Culture tab on the top left-hand side of the page, then click the Donate tab. This podcast is copyright 2012, The Discovery Institute. All rights reserved.